Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast, where single women find support, empowerment, information, and inspiration around the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and mindset. I'm your host, Katie B., and I'm thrilled to be back for a second season to share more stories of women like you and me who are navigating these choices, along with interviews with experts in the fields of fertility preservation, coaching, and psychology. Whether you're just starting to question what to do about your finite fertility, or whether you're ready to make the leap into solo motherhood by choice, I hope these conversations will help you to feel more supported and confident along the way. Because whatever you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. Hi, listeners. I'm excited to bring you a different kind of conversation today. As I've been thinking about the women who I typically interview here on the show, and then those of you listeners who I've heard from, I realize that there's sometimes a bit of a disconnect between who I'm talking to as a guest and who I'm talking to as an audience. And what I mean by that is that many of you listen to the show because you're considering single motherhood, but you're not at a place where you're fully committed to that plan. You're just kind of exploring what that might look like. And so while it's really helpful to hear from women who are further down that path, who've made that decision, to hear about their experiences of actually becoming pregnant, of having children, of mothering as single mothers by choice, I think it's also really important for us to hear from women who are still kind of in the messy middle of deciding if this is the right choice for them. And maybe even women who are experiencing some of the grief and the sadness around life just not really working out the way that we planned. And so today I'm talking with Talitha, and I'm so thankful that she was willing to talk with me because she's someone who is still in the middle and trying to figure things out and thinking through all of these big questions. And I'm just very grateful to her for being willing to open up about what the process is like when you're still in the midst of it. So thank you so much, Talitha, and I hope you guys enjoy this conversation. Hi, Talitha. Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast.
Hi, happy to be here.
I'm so glad to have you here. I am excited to get your perspective as someone who is considering single motherhood, but not at a place where you're ready to say that's the right path for you quite yet. I think that reflects probably a good number of listeners of this show. So I think a lot of women will feel really connected to some of the things you have to say. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here.
And why don't we just start by you telling us a little bit about who you are and just anything that feels relevant to the topics that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a 35-year-old woman who is single, living in Phoenix, Arizona. And I know that I really want to have a family one day. I am very, very single. So I'm just doing some soul searching about what that would mean to have a baby. And babies are just really, really important in my family. As long as I have memories, my mom, every single Sunday in church, working in the church nursery to hold the babies. My sister has become a lactation consultant or is studying to be that. So this is just a theme that is so valued in my family and something that I really do want. We've experienced some loss as well. And so I just know that it is not necessarily simple to have a baby. Yeah, that's just where I'm at and how your podcast has guided me through some of the big thoughts that go through my head right now.
I can definitely relate. I do feel like my family has never put what I would say pressure, but definitely I felt that similar feeling of it's not just me that wants the baby. It's like the family wishes that I was in a different place to be having a baby. So I can definitely relate to that. And to the feeling of being very, very single. That is where I've spent probably most of my 30s, or at least a good portion of my 30s. And I'm curious about at what point did you start to think that relationship status and motherhood could be separated? Like, is that a relatively new thought for you or something you've considered for a while?
You know, I don't mean to sound doom and gloom, but I've had this feeling for as long as I could remember that maybe I was going to have a baby on my own. So I don't really know where that feeling came from, if it's an intuition or if that was my fears manifesting themselves. So I've never been too afraid of the idea. I've just been more afraid of articulating it because there's such a stigma against it in society. So it's definitely been in my 30s that I have become more proactive and also bolder and braver to talk about it. And it's also just more of a reality because I know now it's not just a fear in the back of my mind, but it very may well be my future. And that's okay if that's what happens.
It's interesting for me to think about what that must feel like to kind of feel this impending, this is not the choice that I want to make, but this is one that looks like is going to be my path. Because for me, I was kind of the opposite. I was sort of in La La Land through, I mean, even when you look at like how very single I was and, you know, every year getting older and older, I was just like, no, oh, it'll happen. I'll meet someone. It'll be fine. Like, I was never really that worried about it. And even my journey, which eventually ended up being my journey into single motherhood, I was in a relationship when I started it. So I didn't even recognize it as me deciding to, so I don't even know at what point it got real for me that I was really going to do this on my own, but I would say it was probably after I started the podcast, which is kind of crazy. It is very interesting. And I do wonder about that. I mean, you could probably spin it a lot of different ways, whether it's fear or intuition or, you know, all kinds of things. So tell us a little bit about like what you've done in your work towards thinking about this. It sounds like it's a choice that you're not on board with, but you're open to. And so what has that looked like for you as you've started thinking about it?
I have to say that a few years ago, one of the most magical, even romantic in a way, things happened in my life. And it's so funny to me how easy it seems for other people to just fall in love and how I feel like, wow, that's really hard for me for some reason. But when I tell you this story, this felt extremely easy. So it's kind of funny the way the universe has taken care of me so far. The short story is that I moved to Los Angeles and I had a casting director approach me in a coffee shop in LA. And he asked me if I wanted to be on his game show. And I was like, wow, that sounds like really fun. So I got his contact info and I began getting emails for different game shows in Los Angeles. Eventually got cast on one and just humiliated myself on national television, but all my friends were so excited. And I say I humiliated myself because I didn't win anything. My friends were so excited that I was like, oh, it doesn't matter what happens. Being on a game show is like actually a really fun thing. So I started going out for auditions and I got cast on another game show. Around that time, I was also going through a really big breakup. In preparation for the game show, I was feeling like, wow, if you do well on the show, you could use this money to freeze your eggs. And so I just kept envisioning what it would be like to win what I thought the most money possible would be $10,000. I just kept like envisioning that. We went on the show and I don't know, just fate was on my side and I ended up winning $12,000. So more than I thought was even possible. And I just burst into tears because the whole time I was on the show, I was just thinking about, you can use this money to freeze your eggs. So that was in 2017. And so it took a while for the money to come, but yeah, it was just absolutely magical. I ended up completing my egg freezing on Valentine's Day, I believe it was. So again, it felt very romantic. I was able to do one round of egg freezing when I was 33. And so that's the first step I've taken. So, I mean, I'm obviously doing something proactive, but, you know, I haven't taken any further steps. I'm willing to, but so far, that's as far as I've gone.
There are so many things about that story that I love. First of all, I had never really considered how people end up on game shows, but I love that you were just approached because who knows why, but somehow you had a vibe and the universe was, you know, offering that to you and you said yes, which I love. And then the clarity that you had, I'm putting myself at 33. I'm not sure that egg freezing would have even been on the list of things that I would be considering. I certainly would say it wouldn't be what would win, like what I would decide to do with that money. It makes total sense that it should have been the thing that I would put $10,000 towards if I had it. But I just really applaud your clarity on your life goals and being able to think beyond the next couple years in front of you and know that that was something that you really wanted to secure for yourself. So that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's weird. It's definitely one of the weirdest things in my life, but thank you.
Did you feel like anyone influenced you in that decision? Like, did other people support that idea or did they think it was strange or did you even talk to anybody about it? Like, where do you think it even came from, this idea to freeze your eggs?
You know, I had gotten an email and I don't remember where this came from, but I had gotten an email to attend an event in Los Angeles where a fertility doctor would be talking about the topic. And so I had pretty recently like had a more in-depth education on what egg freezing was and the ideal time to do it and just the logistics involved. I brought the subject up with a few close friends, and one friend actually guided me to the doctor who I ended up working with. So, you know, I was grateful that there was a level of having dialogue with the right people at the right time. Mm-hmm. But then after I did it, I posted about it on Instagram and I was feeling really vulnerable. Like, oh my gosh, I'm like talking about, you know, words that are going to give the boys the heebie-jeebies. but I got more likes on that than I think I've ever gotten, more comments, more engagement than anything else I've ever posted on Instagram. So since that time, certainly I've had a lot more conversations with people just because they know that that's something that I've pursued.
That's one of the reasons I wanted to talk with you, because that has kind of become something that you are actively choosing to be more vocal about and kind of spreading awareness of that option. So do you want to talk a little bit about that, how that's looked? I know you've done some writing and various things around advocacy.
I was working as a freelance writer, and unfortunately the website I was publishing for got shut down after COVID. So you can't read what I wrote, but I was able to write several articles about fertility, about the legal rights of embryos. I did an interview with a friend of mine who adopted an embryo. So that's been really cool to become a little bit more articulate on. I have just a lot of conversations with people and I like to bring it up. So if I have a female friend who's in her 30s or, you know, who I know probably really wants to have children, I like to bring up the topic and just say, oh, this is something I did. Because for some reason, a lot of people feel scared about getting tested or even like allowing themselves to even think about whether or not they have a limited fertility. And I'm not saying that they need to have kids. I would say most of my friends who don't have children, they don't have the same clarity that I seem to have, that this is something that they really want. But, you know, in the private places, we're able, in the secret moments, the calmer conversations, we're able to say, this is the age, ideally in your early 30s, that might be a good time to, you know, get yourself tested if that's something you want to do, or maybe have some serious thoughts about this when you get to your late 30s. That's really going to be the end of, you know, the window where you'll be able to make a easier decision. But one thing I'm really passionate about is I really wish that just as a normal part of every woman's standard care at the doctor, that they would just be given the opportunity to have fertility testing done.
Absolutely. I have no idea why that's not part of just basic care.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like modern fertility, like there is some tech, you know, that's coming up to try to kind of up in that, but that stuff makes me nervous because that's not necessarily given to you in the context of a doctor explaining what it means.
Right. And I mean, you still have to take the proactive step rather than it just being part of like your annual exam or that type of thing. That was really where things started for me. And I know, I think you've heard my story before, but I was just dating and assuming at 36 that things were just gonna, you know, that it was all gonna be okay. Totally had my head in the sand. And it was one of those at-home fertility tests that I took. I mean, honestly, if the ad had not popped up on Facebook, I would not have gone out looking for it. but kind of like you going to the lecture where you kind of got some information. It was just sort of the right little nudge at the right time. And I thought, well, you know, I think there was a, like 20% off or something. I mean, it's like the things that had to line up for me to hit buy on this box set that came to my house, and you just prick your finger and send off your blood on this little card. And I mean, I mailed it off and I was not even really thinking about getting the results because I just assumed it was going to be fine. And it was, you know, it was fine, but it wasn't good. It was like kind of time to talk to a professional was sort of the results that I got. But I could have just as easily scrolled past that. And who knows where I'd be right now? Probably still on Bumble. Who knows? Well, I would love to go back to your story after freezing eggs. Do you feel like that made any significant difference in your life? Did you feel a sense of relief after doing that? What was the effect?
My mom says that she thinks I leveled out more, but I don't know. I mean, yes, it did. It's awesome, especially because I did have a fairly good outcome. It is something that I am so, so happy I did. Even when I get my annual bill to like pay the storage fees, I'm excited. Who's excited to pay $500? But I am excited because that to me is like the most precious, I guess you could say, possession I have. It's the thing I value spending my money on so, so much. But where I'm struggling is I just want more control. I want to like know what it means, right? So like, okay, well, 14 eggs at the age 33, you put that into one calculator and it comes out like, awesome. Okay, cool. You have like a 90% chance you're good to go. And then you put it into like a different website's calculator and that's like, okay, 30%.
And right. Just like, and there's just no way to know until it's your own process, like until you're ready to fertilize them. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, I feel like it gives me for sure a better chance, but it's not an insurance policy. And the lack of confidence, it does still cause me to have some anxiety. It's not like for me personally, like I could just check out and be completely happy. Okay, now I never need to worry again.
Right, right. Has it been harder on that front since you've been listening to the podcast and listening to other women's stories and kind of engaging in this community? Does that make it more real that you can't possibly know what 14 eggs means?
You know what? I have been listening to your podcasts and other similar podcasts for the past few months. I would say they have really given me some major aha moments of just understanding that maybe a really good next step would be to freeze embryos. And I think that in my mind, understanding, okay, you freeze the eggs and then what? Like the then what was just a big, vague question for me. But listening to your podcast and listening to voices of people who have gone through this journey helps me understand what the then what would look like so that I can start to be intentional about what might make sense to do next.
Mm-hmm. And as someone who isn't certain that having a donor conceived child is something that you even want, like, how does that feel to think about choosing a donor and making embryos and going through that process while still unsure?
It feels better with more passing time, the more I get used to the idea. But if I were to make embryos and then maybe use them, maybe not, it feels like the most expensive experiment in the world.
Definitely.
I'm becoming increasingly more open to it. I've appreciated hearing people speak really confidently about what the pros are, you know, the pros and cons. Like, there are significant pros to being a single mother by choice, and just kind of thinking through what those would look like. And that's exciting to be like, oh, cool. Like, I don't have to, you know, share discipline ideas with someone, or I don't have to share anything with someone. This is something that can be 100% my family. I understand where the love is coming from, and I'm creating that love.
Mm-hmm. Something that really didn't dawn on me until I was well into this process is that I think before I jumped in, I thought of it more as like an on-off light switch. Like, I'm either doing this or I'm not doing this. And then once I got into it and realized for me, there was a bit of a journey to get to a point where I was actually, you know, had a pregnancy that felt like it was going to actually result in a child, I realized, no, it's really a series of steps, and it's totally okay to take one step, not knowing if you're open to taking the step that comes after that. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to take one step and then plan to take a break, or take it and kind of see how you feel and see if you need a break. Creating the embryos, I think months ago, I would have thought, well, then that means now for sure I'm going to be a single mom by choice. But the realization that you could create the embryos, and like you said, it's an expensive experiment, but it doesn't necessarily commit you to then having a child that way. It mm-hmm. just is giving you more information. And you may have an experience where you then feel very connected to those embryos and it feels like the right thing, or it may freak you out and you're like, no, I don't think I want this, you know, but you may not be able to access those feelings until you take that next step.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. There are so many parts of this that are both, and it's amazing. To have embryos that can be used now, that can be used later. Like, I have so much peace of mind to know that not only am I pregnant right now with an embryo that I created, but I also have siblings if that's something that I choose. And I don't feel like I need to rush into that because I have them and they're frozen and, you know, that's great. And also, it's a huge ethical concern. What happens to these embryos? It's very different than freezing eggs where, you know, your body sheds an egg every month. So I have no qualms about just trashing those when I'm done with them. But mm-hmm. embryos, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm not sure I really thought this through. And now there's this sense of responsibility for these embryos. So that's hard too, especially if you're not in a place where you're sure that you're going to use them, to think through the ethics of creating embryos.
Yeah, the ethics of embryos are really fascinating to me, because there's, of course, these heartbreaking stories of this precious fertility tissue being lost in Cleveland and San Francisco when both of those clinics had system failures on their freezers, like a week apart from each other. There's the ethical issues of, you know, what happens if a couple makes embryos together and then they get divorced and one partner no longer wants to have the baby. Of course, you're frequently talking about the ethics of what is it like for a child to not be connected to its biological father in the way mm-hmm. that people would be in traditional nuclear old school family. So the ethics are, I don't know what the right answer is, but I think it's really important that people think about all of those things. And it's interesting too, because in the US, it's like, oh yeah, you could make 100 embryos if you wanted to. There's no law prohibiting you from doing that. And in certain countries, you can have 3 and that's it.
How interesting. Okay. So I love that you have approached this. From what I know of you, there's been a lot of emotional processing on a personal front, but also that you've dove into all of this research and what goes on around the world and the ethics behind it and the politics behind it. And I like your approach to this like very overwhelming topic. It just feels like you're doing a great job of educating yourself. Maybe that's kind of a safe way to dip a toe in the water, is just learning a little bit more about how it all works.
Yeah, totally. And I'm just so grateful for people like yourself who are creating this educational content. For me, I'm just like a researcher. Mm-hmm. If I am interested in something, I'm gonna just gobble it up. And it's exhausting to other people how much information I'll take in. So this is not me being a know-it-all. This is just me trying to process an emotional decision. And to your point, it's the way that I'm trying to navigate this.
Makes total sense to me. I think I'm similar in the research angle. I wondered if you would feel comfortable to your comfort level talking about what you worry about or what doesn't feel great about making this choice.
Sure. Oh man. One worry I have is that dating feels so mysteriously hard right now, and how much more impossible will it become if a child who isn't biologically related to a man that I would be interested in is added to the equation. That's probably coming from a place of insecurity. So one of the bigger things I worry about, if I pursue this dream, does that mean that this other dream will forever die? Probably not, but you know, I worry about that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's super common. Am I choosing a child over romantic love forever? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, for the next 20 years or whatever. To be honest, I worry about that too still. And I do have a lot of faith that it will happen for me, but the logistics of it, when I think about, you know, just from a personality standpoint, I'm pretty much an introvert. I enjoy not going out. So I'm like, how much more am I going to not want to go out when I have an infant or a toddler? So even trying to figure out like the timing of it. I mean, I know I'm very lucky to have a hands-on family. Getting childcare won't be a problem for me if I wanted to go on a date. It's more like, how am I going to want to go on a date when my life is, you know, the life of like an exhausted mom. So
totally. Yeah. Another thing that's, you know, this doesn't come up that often when I'm listening to conversations, but for me, one of my absolute biggest worries is obviously my life is finite. You know, I'm not going to live forever. And the notion of bringing a baby or babies into this world and then dying and just leaving them orphaned, it really concerns me. Mm-hmm. And I have an amazing family. You know, I relocated to Phoenix in part because I wanted to have a support. I ended up having a family of my own, but it's not the same. And one thing I think I would do before I tried to get pregnant would be to get like a really in-depth medical physical, just to make sure high risk things that I'm being proactive to make sure that I don't have those things. Because if I knew that I had a diagnosis that was going to dramatically shorten my life, there's no way for mm-hmm. me personally that I would want to be a single mother by choice.
Right. And unfortunately, I mean, yes, you can do some screening and things, but you know, there's no way of knowing. But I can totally relate to that guilt of, you know, when my parents were my age, I was 16. And that just blows my mind that, you know, I'm going to be that much older than my own parents. You know, my son is still going to be in a space where I consider kids really needing their parents, like, you know, barely out of college and, you know, all of that. And then I'm going to be as old as my parents now, which my parents don't feel old, but they certainly feel older than they did when I was in college. And I mean, they're 20 years older than they were when I was in college. So I do worry about that. And that's one of the things, honestly, that propels me to like want to date and find that relationship even post baby, because I want for my son a sense of family that is not just an older generation. Like, I'm hoping that I will find a partner who also has children and that, you know, my son will have step siblings or more of an extended family so that I'm not the only relative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard. I think a lot of women probably feel that way, but you're right. I don't hear it talked about as much as some of the other concerns. I think some of the biggest concerns that I hear tend to be more financial, logistics, childcare, those early years.
That worries me a lot too. That's why I'm more interested in freezing embryos as opposed to trying to get pregnant right now. Mm-hmm. Because for me personally, if I'm the only lifeline for this family and the income, I really want to save up the money to be able to be really confident. You're going to be in a position to take care of this family now.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely true. And I feel a little bit of guilt because I've never talked, this is kind of therapeutic for me because I've never talked about things I worry about on the podcast. And I think sometimes mm-hmm. I come off as like very Pollyanna, like, oh, it's all going to be wonderful. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk about like, yes, guys, I'm still worried about all these things. But, you know, I grew up in a pretty upper middle class family. My dad's income was, I don't know how many times greater than mine, but like, I will never even come close to bringing in the kind of income that I grew up with. Even my siblings are more financially secure. And I feel like I've got the basics covered. Like, I know that I can handle having a child. So I'm not worried about, am I going to be able to feed him or pay for diapers or pay for daycare? But I do think about the times that my dad has bailed me out. I mean, just even, you know, I'm 22 and I blow a tire and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I don't have $400. That type of thing where I just always knew I could call my dad, and knowing that I can't be that type of parent. But then I think about, yeah, but so many of my friends didn't have that type of parent either. It's just because I happen to have that type of upbringing that it worries me that I can't offer it. I mean, if something were to happen to me where I couldn't work, like, that is really scary because I don't have, you know, like a year's worth put aside. I don't know what would happen to us. I guess we'd move in with family or something. So yeah, it's definitely scary. And I also think if you wait until you're completely financially prepared, it may be too late. Part of what pushed me over the edge is that I felt like, how different really will things be for me financially in 2 years, in 5 years?
Yeah, totally. I mean, my understanding is you never feel ready.
No. And I think that that's something that sometimes we might feel like is unique because we're choosing this kind of unconventional path. But when you talk with coupled friends, I mean, there are the ones that plan and they say, oh, we're going to be married for X number of years and then we're going to try to get pregnant and it all just kind of falls in place. But I feel like more often than not, they're scared shitless too. So, you know, it's, it's not just us. Well, to take us on a more like positive note, these are all such real things. And I don't feel like we're being like downers at all. We're being just totally realistic about what is worrisome. But what are some of the things that tip the scale towards this being something that you would consider?
Oh man, there's so many things. One thing is that I have a cat and I foster kittens, and I've just been able to form such a loving relationship with these animals. And wow, it's the best. It's so much better than any item I could buy. You know, I have two nieces and the relationship that I have with them is just, it's the best thing ever. You know, I know that the drudgery, I mean, I've babysat and I've come to a point where I'm like, this is so monotonous. Like, I know that it's not all sunshine and rainbows, but that through line of love is, I've experienced other versions of that. And it's something that it would be so cool. I would be really excited for that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited about that as well. The opportunity to be someone's person, you know, in the way that a child needs their mother. I can't wait. I very much think of my baby as a family project. And I've joke with my family. I'm like, I'm the vessel, but we need to be under no pretense that I'm doing this by myself. All you people who wanted this so bad, you're going to be pitching in too. But just to know at the end of the day that I'm going to be the one that he wants to be there and that I'll be the one that is, you know, making the major decisions. It feels so sweet. I'm so ready for it. And in that way, I am kind of glad I don't have to share it. You know? Yeah. I can't think of a man. I mean, I can think of a hypothetical man I would like to share it with. I can't name an actual man I would like to share it with. So I'm kind of glad that I didn't just pick someone to do this with and then, you know, have to be navigating that relationship at the same time. There's just something so pure about mom and child.
Totally.
Well, so what do you think is next for you?
Well, I decided to have another appointment with my doctor at the end of March. And I just want to have a conversation of like, doc, you did a great job, but I'm not done. What do you recommend? I think probably over late spring, summer, I may be making another move, but I definitely do not see myself being ready to commit to being a single mother by choice until probably several more years.
Mm-hmm. I think it's great to do the legwork mentally, emotionally, and logistically, like getting the eggs and the embryos, you know, all of those things, or even just finding out. I mean, you could find out, and maybe you already have this information that the doctor's like, oh, you know, if you want to just do IUI, like you have a great chance of having that work, you know, like just kind of knowing what that process might look like.
And this goes back to the righteous anger I had earlier. Like I, at the very least, I want to get myself tested again. You know, I just wish that that was something that, I'm not saying that every woman should do this, but I think every woman should have the opportunity to do this during their annual physical. Mm-hmm. So just to touch base, see how things are at, and maybe I'll make some big decisions. Maybe I'll know, okay, you still have some time. You can make some big decisions later.
Would you be interested in talking about dating at all? Are you currently dating? Are you interested in dating? Are you just burnt out on the whole thing? Like, where does that play into things?
Yeah, I can talk about it. There are people who met and fell in love in the time of COVID, but wow, what a disappointing time to be thinking about dating. Just last night, I connected with a guy that we had really good things in common. And he was like, hey, you want to have a phone call? And I'm like, yeah, that'd be great. And then he ghosted me and I still haven't heard from him. So, you know, it's hard. It's just, it's so hard. And we all have our own anxieties. And now that, you know, I've kind of emotionally gotten over the don't feel rejected. He had six pictures of you. What did he even have to reject you on? Like, clearly this is his problem. I can have some compassion too of like, Talitha, you also sometimes just get worked up. You cancel a date at the last minute because you feel a sense of pessimism or a sense of anxiety. That being said, I think you should tell someone.
Absolutely. Yes.
Because of that experience yesterday, my optimism levels are rather low, but I'm sure things can change on a moment's notice. So I'm sure things are possible out there, but.
Right. Well, right, and it's so similar to the whole like fertility journey where everything can feel so discouraging and your numbers can be like so far from where you wish they were. And if you have that one golden embryo, you're good to go. And like, it's the same with dating. Like you can get ghosted 20 times in a row, but that doesn't mean the next guy isn't going to be the one, which in part it's kind of alluring. Like, I think it kind of keeps you in the game, but then it's also just infuriating because how do you know when enough is enough? When is it not giving up, but just deciding to do things differently?
Yeah. And if I can just be a little bit vulnerable, one thing that I was feeling, I would hear my married friends or coupled friends talk about their struggles with fertility. And I would relate to it so much because they wanted a family and they weren't able to make it happen as easily as they thought they could. I felt the exact same thing. But for me, because I'm single, it's almost like you're not even allowed to say you want a family. You're just supposed to be happy that you're single. And I know that there are some people who feel that way, but when I say like, this is hard, this is painful, I have this voice in my head that says, oh boy, are you pathetic, you know? And so I think that some of the grief I felt in the dating space, I've been better able to process it, the better I understand the world of fertility, because to your point, there is so much overlap. And it just seems like if someone is struggling with fertility, there's wonderful therapeutic resources that can maybe help them process that grief. And I don't see those resources for people who dating has been a lot of pain.
Yeah, it's actually like kind of oppressive the way that society has so ingrained this order of operations that single, you really should only be thinking about dating. Don't hop out of order and it's not time to worry about babies yet because you're still single. Like you need to be on Tinder. That's your role right now. Get out there, go on lots of dates. And, you know, that was where I really spun out. I mean, I did this huge like social experiment where I was going on way too many dates for anybody, but especially for an introvert, because it just was like, this is how you crack the code. Like it first comes love, then comes marriage. That's the order that you have to go in. And I don't know that I could have even articulated at the time. I think I really did think that I wanted a relationship above all else. And it took a lot to get to a point where I was like, oh, that was a means to an end. I still want it, but I don't want it nearly as bad as I want a baby. And honestly, I don't want a baby as much as I want to know that that door is not going to close.
Yeah. And not only did you feel at that time, I want a relationship above all else, but you also are living in this superstitious society that tells you you'll only find love if you don't want it. Right. You'll only find it when you
relax. Right. How many people say that stupid thing about, oh, it'll find you when you least expect it? I'm like, dude, I'm 37 years old. I'm never not expecting it.
Right. And I just, that lights a fire under me. I think that's like an abusive statement. And it only comes from people who, in my opinion, found love pretty quickly, pretty young. If you find love at 20, what wisdom do you have to tell me as a 35-year-old for what the dating scene is like? That hubris really bothers me. And my desire is that I stay in my lane and I don't try to offer advice to people for something that I really have no idea on either.
Right. Oh, it's so hard.
Yeah.
I am so thankful though to all of the women, you included, you know, all of the women who are just willing to talk about how hard all of this is and to change the narrative that these two things have to be linked in this way that, you know, we're so tied to the love, marriage, baby carriage. And gosh, just the acceptance that I've received for doing this a different way. Had I really known how it was going to feel to be where I am right now, I think I would have done this a long time ago. And so I want people to hear that. It is so scary. And I hope I've been really honest about this was not my plan A at all. I have always wanted to be coupled. And, you know, I did kind of come into this kicking and screaming, and I'm here and it's wonderful and it's not a consolation prize. And I don't feel any of the judgment that I thought that I would feel. And I'm not worried about being able to parent my child. I think for a long time, I worried about like, what am I going to say when he asks me, why don't I have a dad? And I felt so much concern about those things because I felt like there was a deficit. But now that I'm in this place where I feel like the life that I'm going to give him, not just me, but my community, which is my family and my friends, but also just the community of single mothers by choice, I feel like I'm going to be able to give him a lifestyle and kind of a worldview that's not going to feel like anything's missing. And yeah. I just didn't know that was possible when I started out. So it definitely is. And I hope you hear that too, that I know right now it feels still pretty icky to think about this could actually be your life, but to know that there are those of us walking this path that, you know, you and I are not fundamentally different. I wanted and expected, you know, a traditional coupled life every bit as much as you did and went mm-hmm. through a lot of the same grieving. And I can tell you, I'm not making this up. Like, it really is wonderful over here. So
thank you for creating this content because I benefit so much. And I mean, this is just diversity in general. Like, we all benefit from seeing the way that you grew up is not the only way, mm-hmm. you know, the way that you experience love is not the only way that love exists. So I really do mean it that you creating this content has been very comforting for me and very clarifying. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. And I'm so happy that you want to be a part of it because I think stories like yours are so important because there's not a tidy beginning, middle, end. We don't know what's going to happen in your life. It's really hard to speak from that place because I think, you know, the instinct is sort of like, well, let me see how this turns out and let me figure out how to like package it. What's the press packet going to look like, you know, before I put it out there. So mm-hmm. the fact that you're willing to talk about it and talk about the pros and the cons and where you feel hesitant and what action you've taken. And I mean, it's all just very real. And I think so many women are going to just take a deep breath when they hear you. Cause it's like, okay, it's okay to not be on one side of the fence or the other. So it's yeah. really important.
Yeah. You just might get discovered by a game show casting director.
And then you'll know if you want to buy a car, then maybe this isn't it for you. But if you want to freeze your eggs, then maybe that's a nudge.
Yeah, totally.
I do think that that's really cool though, because everybody plays that hypothetical game of like, what would I do with this windfall? And it was the windfall that you received was like so random and just exactly kind of the right amount to do this thing. And it's what you did. I mean, there's so many other things you could have done and you chose that. So
I think you'll put my Instagram link on here. Anyone who lives in Southern California, you just message me and I will tell you all the tricks for the game show world.
That's amazing. I think that people would love to probably get in touch with you for that and other reasons, maybe just to thank you for being so real because I think it's so needed. But if people do want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
Probably Instagram would be the best. So it's just my name at Talitha Baker. I'm taking a social media sabbatical, but I'll be back on April 10th. This was okay. Really good. This was fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I so appreciate you being vulnerable and open, and I know it's going to make a big difference. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie V. You can learn more about me, this podcast, and the Single Greatest Choice coaching at my website, www.singlegreatestchoice.com.
or find me on Instagram at single_greatest_choice. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all of my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.